All righty. Yo, D.
Yes, sir.
I'm waiting on the Weezy.
Yes, sir.
There he is.
Hey, hey, hey.
My man, Weezy.
All right, cool. So,
G, you want to set up the episode, bro?
Yeah, we can set it up. Anybody who's just tuning in right now to the podcast, you tune in to G, D, and the Weezy Star Wars podcast. Star Wars all day, Star Wars all night. That's what we do. So today's topic of conversation, we're going to be going over episodes 1 through 8. And we're going to be comparing and looking at the discrepancy between the fan score and the critic score, specifically for The Last Jedi. But we're also going to be going over each episode's with their Rotten Tomatoes score with the fans and the critics. So, Dave, you want to get it started?
Absolutely. So we're gonna kick it off. I think we all talked about this before we started the episode. We're going to go ahead and go with the original trilogy first. It makes sense. Star Wars fans, you know, have seen these movies before, you know, first, and it goes in that order, even though it started at episode 4. To preface it, though, and this is something we all agreed on ahead of time. We all know that there was no such thing as Rotten Tomatoes in 1977. So these scores are a little bit biased because these people have been watching these films their entire lives. And they leave their feedback 40 years later on a film that, you know, at that time may not have been as good as they thought, but even though it did set you know, box office records and all that stuff. And I'm just using like a preface on that because you have to keep it in context. So here we go. We're going to start out with episode 4, A New Hope. Rotten Tomatoes, we have a critic score of 93% and an audience score of 96%.
It's pretty impressive.
I agree.
The original Dundada, it was first of its kind.
Not too bad. Moving along, we're going to go to episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. We have arguably, you know, most Star Wars fans would say is the best Star Wars film made at this point. But again, it's all debatable. We got a critic score of 94%. Audience score, 97. Moving along. Return of the Jedi, 80% critic score, 94% audience. And I think that that little dip in that score again is like kind of the critics saying, you know, it was kind of Lucas, you know, having a little bit of fun with the franchise with the Ewoks and stuff like that, which kids at that point we loved anyway. So let's move along. So Phantom Menace, episode 1. We're going to go there next. That would have been the next one that was released in this chronological order. We got a 55% critic score and a 59% audience score. That's pretty crazy.
Say those scores again, Dan.
59 critics and 55 critic and 59 audience.
That's going to be something we're going to have to talk about.
That's a huge.
Yes. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Let's keep it moving. So we got episode 2 coming up, Attack of the Clones. One of my favorite Star Wars films, honestly, because it kind of shows the behind the scenes workings of how the Empire came to be, which is cool in my opinion. We got a 66% critic score and 57% audience. Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. 79 critic, 65 audience.
Interesting.
G does not like those numbers. Before you say anything, I'm going to move along.
OK,
This will break your day a little bit, bro. Episode 7. Critic score 93%.
Critic score for episode seven was 93%.
Right.
And then the moviegoer score was 88%.
It's pretty decent, right?
It's pretty good. I mean, for the next leg of the trilogy, it's pretty good. And now, the one that we really are going to be talking about extensively today, I'm pretty sure there's a couple other scores in here that we're really going to get into. Star Wars Last Jedi came out last year. The critic score was 91%. The moviegoer score was 47%.
That's lower than Phantom Menace on the fans.
Yeah, it is.
But higher in the critics. So, I mean, it's like a blend. I don't know.
I'll look at, let's look at like each like, you know, trifecta of films, and right. then let's look at it, you know, from that point of view, and then kind of we'll go back to the individual ones we really want to talk about. So we have the original trilogy. I mean, nothing tops the original trilogy as far as like the storytelling, you know, the lore building, you know, the cast of characters that were assembled there. I mean, it was done perfectly, in my opinion. There was parts where, you know, the story, you know, would, you know, segue into certain things that you didn't necessarily think was important right at that moment, but then there was payoff later. But I'd say overall, like, it's again, that's the reason why that 4-6 is so beloved, you know, by the fandom. You know, everybody has seen it so many times, like over and over and over again. I'm pretty certain I can get some people that can actually, you know, quote lines out of the movie, you know, or quote the entire scenes out of the movie at this point.
What do you mean, pretty sure you could get some people? We could quote them right now.
I know we could.
I'm playing with you, man. But yeah, I definitely understand. I mean, the thing about Star Wars is like, the magic in itself, like whatever it was meant to do, was unpredictable. You got to understand, man, out of all the investors at Fox, George Lucas only had one that believed in him, Alan Ladd Jr. And like, no one could anticipate the explosiveness of Star Wars. So, I mean, respectively, the original trilogy should have, you know, the highest ratings of kind. It really is.
I mean, yes. I mean,
Harrison Ford.
Go ahead.
Harrison Ford went to the premiere of the film. He said when he saw the ship come over, like it looked like the ship was coming over his head after the crawl, the introduction crawl. He said he knew right then and there that this was something like no other. So, I mean, I expect the original trilogy to blow minds. Definitely. But I definitely think we need to keep in mind that, like I was saying to Dave, there are critiques of these movies before Rotten Tomatoes for those that really, really want to take it a step further. And
yeah, gee, I'm totally up to talking about that. Right.
It just helps keep the conversation in context, because people at the time George Lucas was doing this stuff, they weren't ready. Like, it was carving out and etching out its own fan base. But you had people that were used to making, you know, war films and, you know, all kinds of films that had nothing to do with what he was doing. And it was just revolutionary at its time. So, you know, just for the listener, and I think for myself, too, I'm going to go back and research some of those ratings before the tomatoes. But I think it's interesting that tomatoes came after the original trilogy and is still able to maintain such a high score. So, yeah.
So here's something fun. I just pulled up a May 12th, 1980 review from the Hollywood Reporter for Empire Strikes Back. It's a little bit long. Actually, it's not too bad. Let me go ahead and go through this real quick.
Yeah.
So it says, It's almost too much to expect that a sequel can ever top the success of the original, and I suspect that this will prove the case with The Empire Strikes Back, the continuation of George Lucas' enormously popular Star Wars. Lucas has promised and drafted no less than 9 episodes to complete his project. That's pretty interesting.
Bam. Right there.
That's pretty interesting. It says Empire is labeled Part 5, the second part of the second series of 3 that will accommodate his overall vision. And let's put all doubts to rest right now. While Empire doesn't quite measure up to Star Wars in the freshness and originality of its script and the plethora of space operas that have jamming the screens over ever since Star Wars has somewhat lessened the novelty of city-sized ships sailing the stratosphere. This guy's he's getting crazy with his words. Nevertheless, this 20th Century Fox release remains a rattling good entertainment, a worthy successor to the original, and far and away the best of its kind since Star Wars itself.
Hmm. So it even seems back then, back in 1980, with Episode 5, they were giving rave reviews for that. So there had to be something about that episode, and obviously we know what that is, you know, because we've seen it multiple times. But just imagine, like, you know, you're but going.
This is a critic; it's not a fan.
Well, no,
that's what we're talking about.
No, and here's the thing with critics and fans: like fans, like we're gonna basically look at the movie, and you know, if there's something wrong in there, we'll dismiss it. That's what fandom like is, like, you know, for anything. What a critic does is they go down into the nitty-gritty. They look at the story. They look at how, you know, special effects are set up. They look at, you know, how the story's progressing, how the characters are actually developing throughout the actual film. So they're going to get into, like, they're going to get into, like, the little details and then see, like, okay, Is this actually, you know, coming together in a way where, you know, we can actually say, yeah, this is an excellent movie, or, you know, hey, you know, this is not coming together in a way where it's terrible.
Right. And this is kind of what I've been saying all along, like the scores, the fan score for Last Jedi, it's judging a middle movie, and this is the same exact thing I'm reading for Empire Strikes Back. This guy is like, this critic in 1980, again, he wrote this on May 12th, 1980.
All right. So,
yeah,
David dropped out for a second, but what I'm going to do is I'll see if I can actually pull up that, that article, that he was actually, referencing. And then we'll see if we can't continue the conversation here. But G, do you have anything to say?
While... Yeah, I do. I mean, like, it really a lot of this stuff boils down to, you know, personal preference and personal feelings about the plot. I like what you were saying about, what were you just saying, Wayne?
I was talking about how the critics, they...
Yeah,
they
the go... critics, the difference between the critic scores and the fan interpretation and how that can be major. And I like how Dave referenced that review from the Hollywood. I just pulled one up myself. And just to give you a feel for, like, the mixed emotions at the time, in my personal opinion, it was great. But I still think what George Lucas was doing was just mind-blowing. Here's a... Vincent Canby wrote in the New York Times, June 15th, 1980, The Empire Strikes Back is not a truly terrible movie. It's a nice movie. It's not by any means as nice as Star Wars. It's not as fresh and funny and surprising and witty, but it is nice and inoffensive and in a way that no one associated with it need be ashamed of. It's also silly. And here we go. What's our point? Attending to it, it's a lot like reading the middle of a comic book. It's amusing and fitful patches, but you're likely to find more beauty, suspense, discipline, craft, and art when watching a New York Harbor pilot bring the Queen Elizabeth II into the Hudson River berth, which is what The Empire Strikes Back reminds me most of. So it's like, I think with all the Star Wars, you just have these mixed reviews. I really do.
The reason why Empire Strikes Back is so great is because Vader redeems himself in Jedi.
Yeah, it's
well, yeah, I was just talking about critics and fans. I wasn't really speaking about, like, you know, I was just more or less referring to how you pulled up the article to show that there was negative publicity as well. And that was 1980.
Point about, so, about judging a book in the middle, judging a trilogy or a book in the middle of it. I mean, it's when you actually finish the book, the middle of it might be actually good.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yep. So a lot of this stuff is like shock for people, I think, when they were seeing it. But anyway, let's go ahead.
Go ahead. Continue, David.
All right. So let's go. Where are we going next?
So let's do this. Let's look at like the prequel trilogies, because if you look at those scores that we referenced earlier, that trilogy, like the critic scores, like they dumped on it on at least the first two films, and then the fan scores were kind of in line there. So I mean it's let's just start there, because there's a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, they were all very similar. I mean, those the critic score and the audience score and all of those are pretty much very in agreement.
So let's start with episode one. We got
55% critics and 59% audience.
So, episode one, like, I mean, here's the thing: when you're looking at, and this is for me personally, when I look at these first three movies, yes, there is established lore with 4, 5, and 6, but everybody's always wondered, you know, unless you've read the books, you know, and, you know, we have some Star Wars fans that do read the books, we have some that just watch the movies. I mean, it's, you know, different levels of fandom, but really the big question for those that haven't read the books or haven't, like, really, like, been keeping up with a whole bunch of this stuff is, How did Darth Vader become Darth Vader? Like, you know, what was prior to the Empire? This trilogy kind of like filled in those gaps. So there was going to be like some parts of the story where it just kind of dragged on, but you had to do the lore building here. And I almost feel like when you look at the prequel trilogies compared to the original, you know, trilogy 4, 5, and 6, you know, like 1, 2, and 3 had big shoes to fill, and everybody was looking at 4, 5, and 6 with rose-colored glasses. So, you know, some people were just going into it, you know, saying that, oh, this will never be as good as like the original trilogy. David G.
Wayne, I'm here. I'm here, Wayne.
Okay. Yeah,
I agree. Like a lot, some of it, I think too, is, you know, expectation. Like episode, the prequels was like George Lucas's vision. He wanted to go back and retell that story. I don't know. I don't know. I salute the creative process. I didn't really have any personal things about episode one that really just made me mad or was like, you know, this isn't true to Star Wars. I really enjoyed it. So.
David?
Yeah, I mean, episode one, it's cool. I mean, you see the, you know, the young Anakin and how Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan find him, and they're like, you know, who is this kid, pretty much? And it kickstarts that way. I mean, it's Vader's journey. It's, you know, even though he's not Vader at that point. I think what most Star Wars fans didn't like was kind of the corniness of like just the pod racing and stuff like that.
And Jar Jar. Let's not forget
Jar Jar. I mean, just to be honest, I mean, I don't mind it. But I think that's really what it was. With that movie and maybe episode 2, a little bit of 3 as well. But looking back, I mean, they're good movies. I mean, if you got to understand like the story, and you got to pay attention to that. It's more, that's more important than really anything else.
also remember, too, the people being really upset at the use of CGI.
Because the original Star Wars trilogy was shot
puppet
live action. There was no such thing as, you know, CGI, and actually George Lucas refused to even use it.
Yeah, it was models, costumes, puppets.
Yeah,
like Jabba the Hutt is a live puppet. Like that was real.
Exactly.
Yoda was, you know, done by Frank Oz, which he did in Episode 8. But anyway, we get to that. But it's like, the CGI was what was turning people off, is what I remember. But, you know, it's kind of like there's a counterbalance, okay? Pod racing, I definitely can see where people might be like, oh, but then you also have, like, a double-bladed Sith Lord. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, that part of the movie was dope.
You're getting introduced to both sides of the spectrum in a brand new way.
No doubt about it. That's getting back to, like, my favorite part of the prequels is Darth Sidious behind the scenes with Darth Maul, you know, just playing both sides of the I mean, no one even knew what was going on, and he was the puppet master behind the scenes, which is
exactly
my favorite part of the prequels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I like most about,
unfortunately, Anakin, you know, succumbed to his wishes, and right, you know, I mean, Anakin, he didn't have anything else that he could really go for. I mean, his mother was killed. He didn't have a father. He was, you know, he had these visions that his wife was about to die. It's like he had nothing to lose. So it's a tragedy. It's a Greek tragedy, honestly.
Yeah, it's Hamlet. It's a Shakespearean. I mean,
no doubt.
And that's what I was saying last night, Dave. Like, Star Wars is a science. And a lot of what George Lucas created Star Wars with was basic literary Beowulf, Hamlet, Arthur, the Sword in the Stone, Flash Gordon, these Saturday morning comics. And that formula, when you stick to it, you can ride with it. You can make the adjustments that you want as long as you don't tamper with that formula.
Yeah, no doubt.
You still have your, you know what I mean? You still got your damsel. You still got your bandit. You still got your hero, your antagonist. So, you know, these little things here and there that people found to critique and then drag the whole movie through the mud. As a Star Wars fan from, like, a child, I can't get with that. I can get with the, you know, kind of examining it and trying to understand it and see why the director chose to go this way instead of that way.
Yeah.
Like Irvin Kershner was like, I had to create a love story, but I had to do it without the mushy stuff for Empire with Han and Leia.
Right.
So those type of things is what I get into, and I respect that. I don't know if some of these fans are just looking for face value. Like, I wanted to see the lightsabers just, whoa.
I hear you, man. I think I've kind of said something about, like, my personal opinion of Jedi a little bit. Like, I don't hate the film, but we've talked about, like, how I feel it's a little bit different because you don't have necessarily the George Lucas kind of fingers on it, and you can kind of feel it with the movie a little bit.
I think you don't have his fingers on it, but I think in respects you do. Kind of to go back to what you were saying about in that article about him in 7, 8, 9, he approached Mark Hamill and was like, how would you feel about playing an island hermit, an Obi-Wan type of character around 2015? And that's verbatim Mark Hamill. So I know that George Lucas, quote unquote, as for face value for what we see is removed from this process. But like I was telling you last night, man, a lot of these things come from Lucasfilm, LucasArts, EU, like the Force Connection, even though we saw it in between Luke and Leia, we saw it between Vader and Luke, we saw it between Obi-Wan and Luke. It was really expounded on in Jedi. So there's these things you like that all come from Lucas in a sense, but I definitely feel you. Right. They have to expound on it. Like,
yeah, of course.
George Lucas has to say, well, this is the formula. You can't tamper with the ingredients, but you need to figure out how you're going to write this and, right. and how you're going to, you know, screenplay this thing.
But my initial impression of episode 8 was it was more of a Disney movie rather than a Star Wars movie. And now that we know that, you know, George Lucas actually had episodes 1 through 9 written, I had actually seen that Disney threw out 7 through 9 and they went their own way with it, which is, I think, a perfect, you know, subject.
So,
well, to kind of pick up real quick, Wayne, the thing that's interesting, and I wish Dave was on to hear this. Mm-hmm. See, when you listen, like, I'm not, like, you have to dig deeper. Like, if you watch the documentary on the making of The Last Jedi, George Lucas calls Rian Johnson.
Uh-huh.
Like, he places a phone call to Rian Johnson. And those are the type of things that I don't know if, like, Star Wars fans pay attention to. Like, George Lucas, if in the making of The Last Jedi, if you open up the disc or if you dare to press play, you know what I mean? You'll see Rian Johnson sitting in his office and one of his administrators come through the door and he's like, tonight, George Lucas, he wants to have a phone conversation with you. So it's not like we're talking about like a guy who's most likely overseeing some of this stuff. I don't see why George Lucas, if he was so removed from Star Wars, why he would be calling Rian Johnson. But the only way you're going to see the phone call placed to Rian Johnson by George Lucas is if you actually press play on the DVD. And I'm just afraid there's so much criticism about the movie for face value that people will never know that George Lucas called Rian Johnson on set. Like, why make the phone call to Rian Johnson? I mean, we can assume we know what was talked about in that conversation, but we really don't know. All I know is the phone call took place. So I think George Lucas is in a position of like teacher, not student, where he was a student. Now he's a teacher and these people have been imparted how to do this thing called Star Wars. But I also think that he's expecting these people to come with their own story. Like, you have to come with your own original work. At the end of the day, he's a creator. He's a writer. He creates.
Well, he's more of a consultant at this point, honestly.
Well, he's a consultant, but his original foundation in Star Wars is he's on Skywalker Ranch. He has a room where he sat and he wrote all these scripts. So ultimately, he's a creator. So ultimately, with these new stories and directors, he's expecting them to create from some form of fashion.
Okay, but real quick, G, heard that when he sold the Star Wars franchise to Disney, he gave them the scripts for 7, 8, and 9, and they discarded them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like if he discarded them as they say.
No, Disney discarded them.
Well, Disney, executives, whatever, Disney discarded these scripts. You still have George Lucas making a phone call to Rian Johnson during the production.
Well, I mean,
we understand that if he sold this company years ago, he doesn't have to do anything.
Okay, but that's like adopting your child out to someone else and then saying that you don't love your child anymore. That's not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So my question, and that's my point. If we know that's not going to happen and we know that George Lucas is somewhat involved, why are we saying this is so not George Lucas?
No, I just
you said, see what I'm saying? It's like a paradox.
It feels episode 8, and this is what I told you, I think the next day after I saw the movie, that it felt more like a Disney movie than a Star Wars movie. Maybe that's where some of these negative scores come from. But again, I'm not going to get hung up on it. I'm going to wait until 9 comes out and the whole trilogy is wrapped up.
Well, see, that's the thing with me. A Disney movie to me is Lion King, is Little Mermaid, is, you know, Paranorman. I don't know these things. Like, I don't, you know, that's Mickey Mouse. That's Disney to me. Mickey Mouse and Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears and The Club and all that. As far as it goes for Star Wars, all I know is lightsabers, light, dark, Jedi, Sith. You know what I mean? If I allow my mind to get into the Disney politics, then I actually need to, like, go down to Florida and ask if I can sit in on a meeting. But for all intents and purposes, I can't drag this thing through the mud because I think of this and that. What I have is the tail of the tape. George Lucas did call Rian Johnson. It's not like George Lucas is not involved. And that's what I think people are not understanding. And like I was saying last night, Dave, the whole the Force connection, like you said, started in episode 4, right? But
in actually it was Leia and Luke first.
Right, Luke and Leia. You're right. You're absolutely right. Luke and Leia. So after that, you've got a 10-year gap after the original trilogy in 7. So the only thing to really expound or expand on the Force connection was LucasArts and their video games in the EU, you know, Knights of the Old and all that stuff like we talked last night. So what Rian Johnson is doing, like we found out in the book, The Jedi Path, okay, the Force connection, like Revan, Bastila, Luke, and, you know, Leia and all that, like this stuff is not new. Only it's new to those that need to, like, be coddled, I think, bro.
Real quick though, G, that the Jedi Path is not canon. It's been officially confirmed that's not canon. That kind of is kind of significant.
I'm not disputing that it's canon or not. All I know is, like, it wasn't available for purchase. Now it is, and it's copywritten and it's owned by Disney and LucasArts.
Yeah,
so
I understand.
I'm not with the hearsay. I'm with what I paid for, what has a barcode, and what I read. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I take it. Just like the critics don't judge the films off Blu-rays. I mean, off bootleg and, you know, the first test run. They actually go to the movie, critique it, and all that good stuff. So
yeah, and you do bring up a really good point about, you know, hey, there are properties that are out there that are inside of the Star Wars universe. It may not be direct canon, but, you know, those stories and those side stories are expounding on some part of the universe to kind of lore build. Yeah. So, and here's, I can, episode 8, really, like, my biggest issue was really with Leia, like the big scene was Leia, you know, she's on the bridge of the rebel ship. Kylo's got an open shot to basically take her out. He doesn't do it. You know, the other fighters do take the bridge out, and Leia's floating out, and then she uses Force powers to get back, like, you know, back to the ship. That's right. I was just like, wait a minute, huh? So I was like, okay, that's a new one. I've never seen that one before. And I try to go back and look and see if there was anything that was even remotely close to that. And I don't remember seeing anything in the movies or even, like, in the TV shows or even in the games that, you know, see anybody with that type of power, like Force power, exhibiting something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And, like, instead of looking at it as something that's never been seen, it was like, oh, you know, it's Mary Poppins, it's whack, it's this, that, and the third. It's like, well, how about just paying a little respect to Return of the Jedi when Luke was like, my sister has it? You know, how about just paying a little bit of respect to what was laid down? I mean, if you have a problem with how Leia showed her Force power, then you need to become you need to go get hired by Disney. I feel you. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. At the same time, though, why don't we talk about how that's the first time we actually saw Leia use her Force power? And like I was telling D, Palpatine told Anakin to cheat death as a power only one is achieved. I mean, she pretty much beat death.
Well, actually, you do have a point there.
But I mean, these are the things, like, I like to examine instead of just dogging it.
Okay. Well, and like I said, it wasn't really me dogging it. It was just more.
No, not you, Wayne. I didn't say you were dogging it. I'm just saying in general, people really hate that scene and some people really like it. But me, I'm looking at it trying to connect the plots from 1 through 8. Like, Leia, when did we ever see Leia use the Force?
I mean, we'd seen glimpses of it in 5. And, yeah, it was 5. Yeah, episode 5 with Luke and Leia, like, where they were basically, you know, they knew of each other's presence, like, in, like, totally, 2 totally different parts of the galaxy.
Word.
We knew about that.
But when he told her in Jedi and Endor, she was kind of, like, shocked.
Mm-hmm. But
she was like, you have a power. She was like, you have a power I could never understand. She was in shock.
But then Luke was like, no, you have the power, that power too. And once he told her the truth, she was like, you know what? I've always known this.
I thought he was referring to her being his sister.
I agree with you. I think
somehow I've always known. But yeah, I feel you, Dave. Like, it's this revelation for Leia right there.
It's the same kind of thing with Luke with the Force projection. It's a Force ability we've never seen as Star Wars fans, and people are going to have a hard time accepting it.
But then again, if you kind of look at the Force projection, but then if you kind of project that out even further, if you look at the Force Ghosts, you know, you look at the end of episode 6, there's Yoda, there's, you know, Anakin, there's Obi-Wan. They're there, like, right at the end.
Yeah, but what Luke did, man, was okay, I get it. But to me, he did was, like, projection level 10. Like, that was, not only did he project himself, but he looked whole. Like, he looked like a Force ghost. You could see through him. They were, you know, you could see through him. Luke was solid, and he looked younger.
Plus, he was still alive.
And he was in Ben's head. Like, just like old Ben was in Vader's head in a way. Like, if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you could ever imagine. You know, and that's how
Luke basically said the same thing to Ben.
Man, yeah.
You kill
Pretty
me?
Much.
I'll always be with you.
See you around, kid.
See you around, kid.
Man. To me, if Luke came out swinging his sword, it would have been a repeat of what I've already seen as a child. Now,
it would have been Jabba's sail barge.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Now don't, because you guys know I'm a Last Jedi advocate, but I'll say this. It would have been cool to see Mark do a little bit more with the lightsaber, maybe against Rey during that confrontation. Like, maybe snatch the lightsaber from her hand and maybe her snatch it back. Maybe have that a little bit more intense. Maybe have some rocks break off or something like that. Mm-hmm. But as a 38-year-old father, you know, and a grown man and a lover of Star Wars, I like the hermit. I like the I'm kind of grumpy. I've seen my dad die. I've seen this thing, like, rip things apart. My nephew. I like the... Leave me alone. Go away until I feel that this is where I need to be. And then when it was where he needed to be, oh, Luke showed up. Like, he really showed up. I didn't expect that.
What's really interesting is if Luke can force project himself, how many times can he do that?
Well, I mean, apparently it's just like you only do it once because, I mean, you look at the end of that film, like, everybody knows, for all intents and purposes, everybody thinks that Luke is dead at this point.
Right.
Right. Which I think is a brilliant point because when I see Vader getting pulled, you know, to Luke's ship, I realize that the incredible... The kid that was, like, flipping over people and cutting off hands and, like, moving things with the like Darth Vader, he's gone. That's what makes them, like, legend to me. like the understanding that Luke gave his life. Jedis and Sith were not meant to like be invincible. That's not the point. But he found something sacrificial to give himself for. And ever since I was a kid, I felt that. Like, Return of the Jedi is not the end of... It can't be. It can't be. And the way he went out to me, man, with the two sons and just like... Like I tell you, D, like when I watch it, man, I get choked up. It's just, it's a powerful scene for me, man. Me too, bro.
But what's interesting is you got the two sons there, which I'm pretty sure that Octu is not in a binary solar system. I'm not trying to get too technical.
No,
but
I found
that really, really interesting that there was two sons that Luke was facing just like on Tatooine. So the story will continue. It's not that I'm going to be disappointed about anything. I told you this before, man. Like, I love the way Luke went out. He went out like a hero, just like you just said. 100%. And I can't wait to see, you know, what happens in episode 9 with the rest of the story with Rey and Kylo.
Yeah.
But I found that really interesting because I'm pretty sure Octu is not a binary solar system.
No, I totally agree with you. I see where you're going. No, what I'm saying is they like dead in the physical. Like, if anything, he'd return as a Force ghost. But physically, I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we definitely will see in episode 9. Like one other point I would like to bring up about episode 8. So, really, if we kind of look at the score with the fans, you know, I know another point of contention with episode 8 was basically like in the middle where you had Finn and Finn's side adventure to go to what was the planet?
Canto Bight.
Canto Bight.
Right.
And then you know he was going, hello. Yeah, it's like, so basically, Finn's side adventure, the Canto Bight, to try to find, you know, this master codebreaker to try to, like, break, like, you get onto, like, this...
Supreme Leader Snoke's ship to disable the hyper tracker.
And nothing really came of that.
Yeah, like, they got stopped.
Right. It was just like, okay,
but
it was amazing. It looked amazing, but it was almost like, I mean, this is too... Some people I've talked to, they're like, why were they there? It really served no purpose to the story. You know, they were there, they got captured. Yes, they wrecked a whole bunch of stuff in the casino and, like, you know, things are, like, chaotic. You know, they make their way off, but...
I mean, if you look at Finn and Rose's story, it branches off into a new planet. It branches off into a new character with DJ. It also branches off into the death of Captain Phasma. And it also leads to the sacrifice of Admiral Holdo, which, like, for me was crazy because I like Poe, but she was just like being the queen bee. But I couldn't see what her intentions were, just like Poe. Literally, while I'm watching the movie, I didn't know her intentions were to give her life, you know, for the resistance by taking the ship into Snoke's cruiser using light speed. So the failure of Finn and Rose led to the unveiling of DJ. It also leads to Admiral Holdo giving her life so they can escape the crate. People, that's what I got from it, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the plot to me was not loosely written. It was not all over the place. I followed it. We were kids watching, like, Luke and Sand People on, this stuff, it's not hard. It wasn't rocket science to follow the plot. I don't know if people's dislike for characters has so much to do with the plot. I just didn't find any holes. And I know people also were talking about. Well, anyway, did you want to talk about the Finn and Rose D?
I mean, yeah, we can. It was one of those parts of the movie where it was kind of like, it was, you know, it was cool, kind of like a side story, but you almost felt like it wasn't really necessary almost, because they were, you know, just ultimately betrayed by the guy. I don't know. I'm still kind of up in the air with that. I think episode 9 might kind of tie their story together a little bit, for me personally. I don't know. I'm up in there with that, with those two.
Yeah, DJ. You mean Finn and Rose?
Isn't that what you said?
Yes. Yeah. I didn't. Yeah, I was asking about Finn and Rose. But I was also pointing out how it also led to DJ, you know, Benicio del Toro's character. And
that might have been
how it also.
I'm not sure what's going on.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't know if people have actually pressed play. Because, I mean, it's not that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
But I understand if somebody looks at it, you know, all the way through, and it's like, yo, it's absolutely clear to me what just happened, but I still don't like it. Okay, cool. But if you're just like, oh, Finn and Rose, ah, and you didn't mention DJ, you didn't mention Admiral Haldo, like giving her life, light speed into the ship, like all these cool points and all these cool things, people manage to just kind of like toss out the window.
Yeah, I hate to keep, you know, beating a dead horse here, but it's the middle movie of a trilogy. That's the bottom line, man.
So I have.
Well, I absolutely agree. It's the bottom line, but I definitely don't think it's worthy of all the negative. I really don't. But so that's just me.
So I have a really good question to ask them. So, you know, we're nitpicking about certain pieces of, you know, The Last Jedi, like, you know, how some of the fans don't like this, you know, the Leia situation, the Finn and Rose situation, Canto Bite, you know, all these little small plot points that people are like, well, this doesn't make sense, or I don't like this. Do you think back, you know, when episode 5 came out? Because again, this is the second act in a 3-act play, that people were having these same conversations back in 1980, you know, after they watched, you know, after they watched Empire Strikes Back, they were basically ripping apart, you know, the movie and finding parts that are like, oh, well, this doesn't make sense. Why did they do this? I didn't like this. Do you think that they were having that same conversation that we're having right now?
About, you know, what's funny is I saw one review, a verbatim review somewhere. I don't know where it was, but it was very similar to Kylo telling Rey the truth about her parents, how they were nobody. It was the same exact thing, but it was the reverse. It was Vader telling Luke that he was his father. And the reviewer was like, I promise you, Vader is lying. He just wants to get Luke on his side, blah, blah, blah. And it was really interesting to see that.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally the opposite of what, you know, fans are speculating about right now.
Agreed.
Yeah, I just find it very interesting that, you know, after watching episode 8, you know, like seeing it multiple times, I know you guys seen it like umpteen times, like, you know, yourselves, you know, that I kind of look at this situation, and you look at all the middle Star Wars movies in their respective trilogies. People were kind of like, they're like, all right, this is the second movie. I'm not 100% certain about how this is going to go. I mean, you look at episode 2, there was a lot of people up in arms about that one at the time. And, you know, again, you kind of had to set up some pieces for the final movie in the trilogies, you know, so that way you could actually have some payoff. And I think that like, I think part of the reason why people are, or at least the fans are so down on this one, is there's a whole, they've opened up a whole bunch of different ways that you can take the story, but there was no payoff. There was no immediate payoff to where you could say that, oh, well, this makes sense. I understand this part, or, you know, some of the stuff was paid off, but not in the way that they thought it was paid off. Or not, or they were like, oh, well, it should have been done this way.
And I think for you guys, I mean, being around me personally, Dave, I don't know how many conversations we had before Last Jedi. I mean, you already know I'm a Ben Solo fanatic, man. And Wayne, you already know too. And I was so pleased with what he had done. I really wasn't trying to hear. I mean, you know, and we all, as fans and critics, we all have our biases. And I will admit, you know, a lot of my love and adoration for this film comes because of Kylo Ren's redemption in a certain way, in a certain way. Like, he did what he did, and I liked it. And that was, like, the theme for, you know, the whole movie. But then came, because Dave, when we talked, David, when we talked last summer before the release, I was telling you, I was like, David, you know, I like Vader and I'm a Vader fanatic and I'm not too crazy about Luke. You know, he, and now Luke was soft to me, you know what I'm saying? Going to get the power converters from town and he's always whining about how he needs, you know, he just was soft, blah, 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 blah.
You're like, then, Luke, soft farmboy.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're like, nah, he's the most powerful, blah. So when they gave me this, bro, I felt like, you know, I was just like, man, I'm getting it from my favorite character, Ben, but I'm also getting the Luke that I like. He's like, you know, throwing the staff in the water and getting his food, and he's like up the hill, and he's like, man, get away from my door. Go away. I don't want, you know, and that's, I was looking for that. And I think when it comes to these movies and what we like about Star Wars, it really is about what appeals to you. I'm not saying The Last Jedi was perfect, but it's got to be refreshing to hear something positive about the film. And again, you've got people online who love The Last Jedi. They just get no play. But I guarantee you, with just like with Empire, it was up in the air. Some people loved it. Some people are like, what is going on? When this thing finally plays out, it's kind of like this. If we give you, like, I was thinking about this, Dave, when I sent you that text message about the Knights of Ren, because I watched a video and they were saying, I think it was Zero, and he was going over the fact that they had casted like 7 or 6 young guys in their early 20s that were training with Adam Driver. So yeah. I started to look at this thing and I'm like, I see what they're doing. Like, in a sense, you can't be in a rush with Star Wars. Before he amasses or rides with the Knights of Ren, let him take over first. Like, let the story, it's kind of like chess or checkers, things have to move over here for this over here to work. And J.J. Abrams, when he did 7, he had that split scene with the Knights of Ren in the rain. After Kylo has taken over the First Order, which he did, it would make sense to kind of bring those knights into play.
It's almost like they're going to be his Praetorian guards at that point.
Man, we right on the same page. I was just about to say that, D. Like, he's going to need his guards, and he's going to need his ensemble. And, hey, where do we go from here, you know? But, you know, in Star Wars, especially with The Last Jedi, who knows? What if I don't like episode, like, when episode 7, when Rey, like, I got so tired of listening to you, David, tell me how Rey beat Kylo, just like Snoke telling Ben in the throne room, you were bested by a girl. It was the prelude to the whole thing. I'm like, please stop it. But something in episode 9, I may not like. But it's Star Wars, so I'm going to get with it.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, who liked Obi-Wan getting beaten by Vader in episode 4. No one liked that. But in the overall grand scheme of things, it was the best. It was the best move for everybody.
I like it.
You know what I'm saying? So, so it's wait till it all plays out, man. That's right. How it works.
Hey, Dave, I did like when Vader took down Obi-Wan.
I'm sure you did. But you know,
I didn't quite understand when I was a kid, like where he went. But I knew Luke was like, no!
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Hey, like, G, can you make that noise again, bro?
I can't do it, man. That was Dave. That's for the playback, man. Shoo, you know? But yeah, I mean, what do you think, Wayne, Last Jedi, man?
So overall, when you look at it in context with the other middle stories, I felt like it did what a middle story was supposed to do. You progress the main part of the story. You've introduced other parts. I think also with this particular one here, where they started killing off, you know, beloved characters, I think people started to get, like, you know, people were upset, obviously. But I do think that us going into episode 9, you know, they have a license to take the story wherever they really want to go.
And I think if I could interject for 2 seconds, Wayne, I think that's a real fair statement. Like, if your affinity is for Darth Vader ever since you're a child, you know, your hero died a long time ago. You're kind of over that hero dying stuff, you know? Like, Anakin suffered greatly. Like, limbs, Padme died. He suffered. He died. Like, when if you're not kind of accustomed to your favorites dying, then you're not used to it. And I could feel why people were just kind of like, man, Han's dead, now Luke? I feel him. But guess what? It happened to the Chosen One. So no one is exempt.
Mm-hmm.
No one.
So, yeah, so basically...
That's kind of a different thing, though, real quick.
Go ahead.
I mean, you have Harrison Ford who wanted... he wanted Han Solo to die in 5. And Lucas was like, nope, not happening. He wanted him to die in 6. Lucas was like, nope, not happening. So they brought the original characters back for 7, and Harrison Ford finally got his wish. To have, you know, Solo killed off. But I don't think Mark Hamill was necessarily like on the same page with, you know, with that mindset.
No, he wasn't, mm-hmm. Dave. He was not. He was not on board with it. And that too, to me, is again amazing, because his it's like his performance in The Last Jedi is like Oscar worthy. Like, I know I'm kind of blowing it up a bit, but it was like he never missed a beat. Like, Irvin Kershner and Frank Oz said that Mark Hamill basically carried episode 5 with his dialogue and his acting ability. And when he was on screen with episode 8.
The scene at the beginning when he gets, you know, he gets captured by the Wampa is just amazing. One of my favorite scenes ever.
Isn't it great, mm-hmm. bro? He's the dialogue with Yoda, because he was like, I was talking to a puppet, but it was me and the puppet and, you know, Frank Oz, of course, but I had to assume the role. But anyway, my point was the fact that Mark Hamill, like he said from the beginning, I fundamentally disagree with everything about this character. But what he did was he, like, shut off his personal feelings and gave people an A-class performance. And I was just like, it's like an honor.
That's what an actor does. Like, I mean.
It's crazy.
You have to separate your personal feelings from your role. But that's what makes him, like, as good of an actor as he is. I mean, I don't know if you guys know that he does the voice of the Joker on the animated Batman series.
Yeah,
he's so talented as far as like you know, his acting abilities and stuff like that. So that's not really surprising to me. I mean, but You know, he got to the point where it's like, I got to separate my personal feelings from the professional part of my job, and I got to do what I got to do. And that's what he did.
The saddest statement he made was, ultimately, it's not my character. It doesn't belong to me. They just rent it out to me because I really don't own it. When he said that, it was kind of like, it was really sad.
Doesn't it make sense though? I mean, if you look at Star Wars as a whole, I mean, yeah. We have David Prowse as Darth Vader in the original trilogy with the voice of Vader being the man that we all know. Right. And then in the original trilogy, you have Hayden Christensen playing Anakin. So right. Can anyone care? Actor really claim a character? The answer is really no at that point.
They can't. But at the same time, David, the trend with Mark Hamill seemed to have been like he wasn't moaning and groaning about the business side of it when, you know, he was in 5 and 6. I think when he ran into the script that says, you know, this is what happens, then he begins to expose the, you know, the business of it, and kind of people latch on and kind of ride with it. But what we need to know is the business aspect of Star Wars has always been there. Like, matter of fact, the business side of Star Wars was there before it even hit the screen, because George Lucas, like I said, you know, earlier in the podcast, only had one investor on Fox. He also secured the license and the rights to all merchandise before the film was released because no one believed in it. So what I'm saying, my point is, Wayne, and Dave, he'll be hearing this. My point is, there's always been a business side to Star Wars. There's always been a business side to Star Wars. I just don't think, you know, it needs to be so preyed upon just because one of the actors was unhappy with the direction of the character. Mm-hmm. I don't think it needs to be turned into, you know, Disney is thieves and it's a Disney thing and they've taken over. I'm sorry to inform you, but the Rotten Tomato scores for episode 7 that we just went over was under Disney supervision.
That is true.
When you get something absolutely true. Right. So when you get something you don't like, let's not kick and scream and start reaching for the nearest person to clock and hit. Let's look at this thing in perspective. Let's really say, okay, what I respect Mark Hamill for is expressing how he felt about the character and fulfilling the role that Rian Johnson wrote.
And like, no truer words have been spoken. Yeah, you may not as a fan like some of the directions here, but again, this is act 2 in a 3-act story, and you know, a lot of people, you know, I think ultimately, you know, if episode 9 turns out extremely well, where it ties in everything, and then you're able to finish off the story to, you know, you're able to finish off this part of the trilogy in a way where everybody, you know, where it's like, you know, a thrilling like end to it.
Right.
I think everybody's going to go back and they're going to look at Last Jedi and look at all the criticisms that were, you know, leveled against it. And they're going to look at it and be like, you know what? If this movie wasn't as nearly as bad as what we thought it was.
I think so too. It's going to be like, if we try to watch 7 and then try to watch 9, it's just not going to work.
No, because you're missing an entire act.
You're missing it, especially if they seeded something in 8 that reveals itself in 9. Which, I don't know if you paid attention to this one part, Wayne. There's a part where Luke and R2-D2 are sitting on the Millennium Falcon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Luke lifts his, you know, he has this little conversation with R2, and he's like, you know, I've been on an island, and R2's like, beep, beep, beep. And he's like, hey, watch the language. You know, it was a good island, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, to R2, there's nothing that could make me come back to the fight. Nothing. So R2 goes back into his archives and he plays the original.
Recording from Leia,
right? Mm-hmm. So here's the thing, and I want just pay attention to camera work and movement. So he plays that, and Leia's talking, blah 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 blah, and Luke looks at R2 and he goes, "That was a cheap shot," right? then the camera goes back to Leia, and it grabs, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope." Mm-hmm. Now, immediately, the next scene goes to Rey's face sleeping with Luke standing over her saying, "Lesson one in the morning."
Because he remembers that time where he's seen that recording.
Well, what I'm saying is I'm making the connection between Obi-Wan and Rey in the camera work.
Mm-hmm.
R2 plays the recording for Luke. Luke recognizes the recording. Great. That was a cheap shot. Low blow. Ha ha ha. Then the camera goes back to Leia's recording as she's saying, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope." Then the camera shot right on Rey's face. It's not... So the camera did not really have to go back to Leia saying, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope," is my point. The camera did not have to go back to the tail end of that message to hear that. And even if it did, the next shot didn't have to be Rey's face.
But if you really think about that particular scene, when he's watching that recording, he realizes the position that he's in now. He's no longer, you know, that little kid that, you know, got thrusted into this, like, big, like, you know, grand adventure to save the galaxy.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Yeah.
And at that point, he realized that, oh my gosh, I'm in the same position as Ben was when Ben got that recording. Like, he was the only one that could actually help the rebels against the Empire at that point. Just as Luke is the only one that can help, like, you know, help the rebels against the First Order.
Right, but it's still...
It basically came full circle.
Did, but that's Luke. The camera work. "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi." Remember, Luke already acknowledged the recording. He already told R2, okay, low blow, I'd come back for Leia, blah, 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 you got me. Then the camera goes to, "Help me, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope." Next shot, Rey's face, sleeping. So, for face value, absolutely, Luke realizes where he's at. He realizes that the only thing that could bring him back possibly would be, you know, if Leia sent a distress call, which he basically did return for that. But... The main characters in the movie are Ben and Rey. And I find it odd that the camera grabbed the last portion of what Leia was saying on that recording as, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope." And then the next shot was Rey.
So
what I'm getting
I think I know where you're going with this. So episode 9... Let me take this and extrapolate this out and, like, kind of, like, prediction, like, out on a limb. So Ben tells Rey that your parents are nobody.
Right.
We have that camera work with the end of that message and Rey. So what I'm thinking is there's going to be a revelation in 9 that Rey's actually a Kenobi.
Now, that's my prediction. Now, you talk about full circle. Ben being a Solo Skywalker, hopefully her being a Kenobi, if those two do fall in love, like, that's that's full circle. That's mm-hmm. balance. It's almost like the balance cannot be fought by destroying Sith and Jedi, but by unifying the two. And when you were talking Sith and Jedi or dark and light, the two mm-hmm. that the two that I think of are the Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi, Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
When they fought at the end of episode 3,
that thing rocked the universe, bro. That was the most powerful. I mean, Palpatine versus Yoda was powerful, but Obi-Wan versus Anakin was out of this world. Like, that was just insane. And if she is a descendant of the Kenobi, and we know Ben is a Skywalker, Solo, mm-hmm. then that is, to me, full circle.
I agree, because now you actually have reconciliation there.
Complete reconciliation, and it's done through love. The same way Han and Leia were in love, the same way Anakin and Padme were in love. It's a love story at the end of the day. After all mm-hmm. the swinging and everything, it's a love story. Anakin's fear of losing Padme is what drove him to become who he was. He didn't want to repeat what happened to his mother to happen with his wife. So it drove him to the brink of, but it was a love story crumbled. And he fought. It was a tragedy. And if you watch, the nucleus is love. The nucleus is love. And man, if I'm not one for the Reylo theory and none of that, because I'm not with that. I just like to call it as it develops, as it falls into play. But if mm-hmm. those two do, if that does happen, that will be powerful. But I will say this, before any of that happens, there's going to be a major war. And somebody else is going to get off.
You've got to have that final showdown. I mean, you've got to have that final showdown. You've got to have, like, hey, like, this is for keeps. I mean, we really thought we had that at the end of episode 6, and really, we didn't. I mean, yes, like, the Rebels won, Empire was gone. They had their backup plan, the First Order. They were carrying on, the Empire, the Emperor and the Empire's, like, you know, plan. So yeah, I expect a huge final battle in episode 9. You know, between the Sith and the Jedi and the First Order and the Rebels. With whatever little rebel support that they had at the end of episode 8. You know there's gonna be an epic showdown at the end, somewhere in that movie. There has to be.
I hope so, man. I hope so. Wow, Last Jedi, it took a long time for people to digest it, and I still think they're digesting it, Wayne.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, man, wow. So, episode 9's on the way. What were you going to say, Wayne? I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think people are still going to keep digesting it, until 9 comes out. I mean, you're going to have people that are going to reluctantly go back and watch 8, and then if they do watch 8 before they go watch 9, again, I think their minds are going to change a lot on 8.
I do too.
So at this point, I don't know if David's coming back. We've been talking for almost 10 minutes, with the two of us. So
yeah, I mean, it was a great pod, and he's always had, great points, and he's definitely a dedicated Star Wars fan, so I definitely think we can wrap it up, man. And I think there was somebody else that wanted to join the conversation, a friend of mine, because he had some input on The Last Jedi and some of the other episodes, some theories that we never heard. And Wayne, you got to remind me, because there's an Ewok theory that is absolutely crazy. You think they're soft, cute, and cuddly, but when I give you that Ewok theory, man, you might just lose it.
Well, I'll be waiting for the next podcast to hear that one. I'm pretty sure it'll blow my mind on that.
Definitely. All right, man. Well, everything will be posted, you know, for people to view here in just a few. And another great one in the books, man. Let's look forward to the next one. If we don't do a sequel to this one, I know for a fact me and someone else, and if you're down, I know Dave would be down. We were wanted to talk about lightsabers, the evolution of the weapon, your favorite, your least favorite, how you feel about it, just the lightsaber in general. So yeah, man.
All right, I would be down for that discussion. I really like the concept of the lightsaber.
Yeah.
And this is a little bit of a teaser for the next podcast, because, you know, like, I mean, for some reason, swords just amaze me. It's the visceral close quarters combat. Like, you know, one move, one incorrect move, and that's it. That's it. So, I mean, there's something about, you know, being up close and personal, like staring your enemy in the eye, that is just so captivating. But like I said, we're going to save that for another podcast.
Exactly. I like it. All right, Weezy. Pleasure doing it, man. Let's get back next time, man.
All right.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right. You enjoy your night.
All right, later, man.
David, like, talk
salute
to you later.
Salute, D. Go.